Recording. All right. This is David Duncan conducting an oral history interview for the COVID-19 Oral History Research Project. It is May 2nd, 2020, and I'm interviewing Charlie Johnson, who is in
RN.
RN in Capitola?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. All right, Charlie. Well, just to get started, would you mind telling me a little bit about your motivations becoming an RN and kind of the steps you took to get to that job?
Sure. My motivations, I think, are as cheesy as they sound. My mom's a nurse, and of course she wanted me to do what, you know, she wanted to do. So, and of course I fought that. I didn't want to be a nurse because I didn't want to do what my mom wanted to do. So I went into public health and got my bachelor's. Realized I didn't really like that. And then my mom's very big into doing lists of, you know, what you like and don't like. And I did that, and everything I ended up liking turned out to be kind of fitting the idea of nurse, you know, helping people, not working 5 days a week, things like that. So I took a chance and did nursing. And, you know, I was a CNA before that, and I really liked it. So I thought nursing was the next step in that area. And it also had a good career progression in terms of a nurse practitioner or anything like that. So multiple fields. So went ahead and did that and love it so far. So
nice.
Awesome. Yeah.
And this, how long have you been an RN?
A little over a year now.
All right. And, in the course of your training as a CNA or an RN, and your public health education as well, was there anything close to kind of describing the current situation we're in with COVID-19?
I remember in public health, because I feel like COVID so far has been a very big public health kind of situation. And when I was becoming a public health professional, they were always telling us, you know, public health is either they never think they need you until they really need you and it's too late, or you're trying to always advocate for more resources and things like that. And they'll say, why do we need this? Nothing's happening right now. And you're always trying to convince people like, well, what if it could happen? And that's always kind of a losing or uphill battle of trying to convince people of what ifs. So this has been a big kind of thing where all of a sudden, you know, we're having a lot of problems with PPE right now and everything like that, which has been big public health. And it's been tough because there's been a lot of people saying, you know, these are steps that we need to do, especially in the United States, since we have the funding to do it. We just don't necessarily have the people in power want to put our, you know, funds and allocate it that way. So it's been interesting watching. We've been very reactive in the last few months to COVID. We've been now all of a sudden we're doing kind of being more proactive and trying to do tests now and everything like that, but it's been getting the things in place to be able to kind of react to the more influx of people we've been seeing, things like that. In terms of nursing, it's been good. I think our hospital has been very good in making sure they're keeping us safe, which has been good to hear, because we've heard stories of the East Coast where it's maybe not happening as well. So that's good to hear on for us. I know my hospital in general is been good with PPE so far, as that's what we've been hearing. We also have been able to, I think, to stay at home, which personally I was surprised that they mandated that, which I think is awesome. That has caused a low census for the last few months with our hospital, because I think people are, you know, they're not drinking and driving. They're not, you know, going out and getting in accidents, things like that, because they're staying home. We've been seeing low census. So that has been doing the purpose of the stay at home to kind of offset the amount of people going to the hospital at once. So we haven't been too overloaded yet. We do get COVID patients every day. So, you know, we are getting that steady stream, but it has been manageable so far, which has been really good to hear and see. So it's cool to see kind of, you know, the stay at place home, like those kind of things are working in our favor. But at the same time, you have to like ask yourself, like, these are things that should have been talked about in advance and you know, things like that. Because when our government came out and said, oh, we want everyone to, you know, stay in place, it came kind of out of nowhere. I remember I was at work when we got a stay in place order and we got the Amber Alerts on our phone that was saying, you know, the county's closed down, and everyone's like, what does this mean? No one had really heard of it before. There hadn't, I mean, as far as I could have been out of the loop, but there hadn't been really any previous talk to it. It kind of was a sudden decision made, so a lot of people didn't take it seriously at first. So I think in terms of we are reacting, we are trying to react well to it, but we didn't have a lot of plans in the get-go.
For sure. So. And that's, I'm sort of curious too, kind of the trajectory of COVID-19 kind of in your own mind of, kind of what stands out when you think about when you first heard about it, if you drew any connections with your own work, like thinking that it would affect you at all.
Right. So definitely, and I don't know if this was kind of our way to try to normalize it for ourselves, but there was a lot of comparisons to the flu when it first came out and we're first hearing about it. Before there was ever any reported cases in the United States, and when it was mainly still in China, and Wuhan, and when it started going over to Italy, people kept, I think we kept seeing it blown up on the media a lot, and we kept seeing, you know, all the death counts and all this other things that are good to report about, but I think a lot of people are having negative reactions to it, at least in my hospital, because they were thinking, oh, the media is kind of sensationalizing the news, and they're kind of trying to take and make it blow it out of proportion when, you know, they don't give time of day to the flu and all the flu cases that we've had this year. And we had a really rough flu season, so I thought a lot of people were kind of angry that, oh my God, all of a sudden COVID's getting all this attention, and we were just slammed with the flu and no one seemed to care about that. Of course, now looking back, it's not fair to compare the two because COVID's a whole kind of different situation. But in the beginning, it was kind of like that. I think I saw a lot of doctors saying, well, you know, we're constantly comparing it to flu. And a lot of nurses were saying, like, you know, why is the media making a big, you know, fuss about this when, you know, we're having, you know, X amount of deaths of more of the flu every year and blah, blah, blah. So a lot of comparisons in the beginning. Now, you know, no one's saying that anymore. Everyone's taking it very seriously. No more comparisons. But that's how it first started for us. Of course, as it became bigger and bigger and it started to reach the U.S. and our hospital started to gear towards more proactive kind of cause. I know we started going out to do community outreach. So I think that was a really cool thing where they would go, and we have a large Spanish speaking population. So they would go, and I know the fear was, a lot of people might not want to come to the hospital if they are undocumented or they didn't feel safe. And I think they were at the time, I'm trying to remember, everything's kind of a blur in my memory for history, but I think there was a lot of the ICE fear that, you know, they would be reported to ICE. So there's a lot of it at the beginning, a lot of community outreach to say, like, please come if you're feeling sick. So, you know, don't feel in danger. So that was cool to see for the beginning. Now with the whole COVID, as of last week, at least for our work, we've been slammed with really, really sick patients that aren't COVID patients, but they're being affected by it because we're seeing a lot of people not wanting to come to the ER because they are afraid of getting COVID. And so they will wait until they're very sick, and then they'll come when they literally can't function at home anymore. And that's leading to this last week has been like a lot of code blues. And we're having just, you know, people coming in for things that aren't a big deal, but they've let it go for so long that all of a sudden it's become a very big deal. So that is kind of how I currently see it going, is a lot of people are waiting to kind of get a checkup on their health, and they're letting issues that if they were normally on top of it, it wouldn't have been such a big deal or waiting for so long. and we're seeing a lot of sick people now, not necessarily due to COVID, but because of the whole situation. They're afraid of that, and I can't obviously blame them, because if you see CNN or anything like that, all you see is the death toll and how, you know, people are being impacted. So that's definitely our next challenge. I know because of where I work, we have a big agricultural population. I heard, I don't know how true this is, but I heard it was one of the biggest in Central California. So I know from what I've been told in our hospital, we're going to have a big, every spring we get a big mass of migrant workers to come and to, you know, plant, and, you know, pick, vegetables, things like that in our farmlands. And it's been estimated that every year we get around 50,000 from the surrounding. Yeah. And because of course they're essential workers and, you know, all these other economic problems, we're preparing right now for a potential mass influx of COVID patients, because obviously working out in the fields is close contact, working with a lot of different people. So that's our current, from what I understand, our current kind of project right now is preparing. I know we've been having a lot of, they've made kind of like a team of Spanish speaking nurses that have been doing calls out to try to do education so people know, you know, signs to look for, when to social isolate, things like that. But of course, you know, we can give all the education we want to people, but depending on their, you know, certain economic situations and social situations, they might not be in a situation where they can necessarily follow that or anything like that. So I don't know how it will go, but as of right now, we're having a pretty good handle on the situation. So hopefully we'll continue to have a good handle on it.
It's good to hear. I mean, good to hear someone has it handled. Kind of back to what you mentioned before too, I'm curious if you could kind of pinpoint when that change occurred that you're talking about with hospital staff kind of, I don't know, if you would call it not taking it seriously, but
right.
When did that change occur that they really started taking COVID seriously?
I think first you would begin to hear about it on the news a lot. And this was before any, you know, stay at place order was in place, before our hospitals even would start sending out the daily emails we now get about COVID statuses worldwide and within our own hospital. So this is before any, you know, anyone was talking about it. We just see it on the news. I think we were comparing it a lot then. And as we started to get cases, I know, I think Washington, that nursing home was kind of the first to our California to really break out. And we were seeing how, one, unprepared they kind of had been for it and how fast it spread and everything like that. I think that started to change a lot of people's minds in terms of, and of course, because this is all new, there's no necessarily, of course, the corona family viruses we know about, but the specific COVID we don't know a lot about because it's a new disease, and the flu we know a lot about. So in the beginning, it was easy to say like, oh, the flu is this deadly. Look at all the stuff we know about. But the thing I think that we have to keep in mind too is we're learning things every day about this COVID-19 that we are currently finding out every day. So I think as more information about that has come out and we're finding out about how the infectious rate of it is a lot different from the flu in terms of it's been more infectious. It's obviously become a different beast of its own. And by the time I think the stay in place order came out, people in our hospital, the general consensus had changed to, oh, this is kind of a serious thing. I remember I was on the unit that day when they decided to make it a COVID unit. So they were, they had wanted us to discharge every patient to or transfer it to a different floor. And that was the first day that our managers kind of came to us and said like, hey, this is going to be a COVID unit from here on out. And this is our current way we're going to deal with it. You know, they want two nurses for every patient, or one nurse for every three patients. And this was in the beginning. And then they had buddy systems. Of course, every day it seems we're getting new information from CDC and everything else. So it's changed quite a bit. But I remember that was back in March, early March, I think. And that was like also another time of like, you know, this is a lot more serious than what, you know, the average take on, say, the flu would be. So I'd say early March is kind of when we saw the shift change. So.
Yeah. And I'm curious too, you know, having worked in a hospital before, that, you know, every hospital kind of has its own like vibe and like culture to it. Especially when you're spending that much time around the same people on a regular basis. I'm curious if you've noticed any changes in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. I know because, for example, they didn't really, as far as I was aware, they didn't notify anyone that they're like, hey, we're changing this unit to the COVID unit. So all those nurses were all of a sudden like, oh, you know, we're COVID nurses now. You know, they weren't any, and they didn't really tell us beforehand. It was literally mid-shift. Hey, we're going to start transferring these patients out because this is now the COVID unit. So I think at that time, there was a lot of fear because that was, again, around the time people were transitioning from, hey, this isn't like the average flu. This is, you know, its own kind of beast. So, and it was also at a different time where there wasn't a lot known. I think Italy was being really affected by then. So, you know, we're getting a lot of information of how scary it was without a lot of information of how, you know, there wasn't any cure yet or any kind of, we were still figuring out how it was transmitted, how long it could stay in the air for, how long it could stay on materials for, things like that. So there was a lot of fear. And I personally know a few nurses that asked for transfers to different units because, you know, they had families that they didn't want in, which I'm not blaming them at all. They had, you know, families that they're like, I don't want to bring this home to my kids, things like that. So, and I think that it was smart for them to do if that's what they wanted to do. But since then, I think it's been a general, I feel like always kind of on our toes of acutely knowing like, well, will there be enough PPE for personal protective equipment? Or if I continue to go and work on the COVID floor, what if I get COVID? Well, you know, will they pay me not to come to work for 2 weeks? Or, you know, do I have to do this? So there's all these questions that had never been asked before that all of a sudden we have to worry about. There's been a few cases where we get a patient who all of a sudden doesn't want to be there anymore. And it's not, we can't hold them against their will, obviously. So what do we do? And like, how do we get them from our unit out of the hospital? Cause obviously you have to go through the walk or hallways, things like that. There's also been questions about, you know, what if people pass away while there? How do we get the morgue to technically get the body? Because in the beginning, no one wanted to, you know, to go through with that because there wasn't any information really about, you know, how long can, or, you know, how long do we, are we allowed to keep them before, you know, people come? So there's a lot of, again, reacting to it. There wasn't anything, which isn't necessarily anyone's fault because at the same time we were learning every day about more about the COVID, but there also wasn't, to my understanding, anything in place at the time. So I think that all this kind of changing things daily, where in the beginning everyone had an N95 mask and we were gowning down to now it's, we need to save our N95s so we can clean them. And if they don't have COVID positive and maybe they're just a rule out, you don't have to wear the same amount of PPE as you would for a positive patient. And obviously a lot of people are, you know, saying that doesn't quite make sense to us and things like that. So I think those kind of policies and the rules constantly being changed have caused kind of a lot of anxiety among the unit. Which is hard, you know, that blame doesn't fall on any one person. I know our hospital is trying to do what they're receiving from the CDC, and, you know, they're trying to follow the best guidelines while keeping everyone safe. But it's definitely been a everyday kind of situation where every day we're trying to work through either a new problem or something comes up where even simple things like we had a clogged toilet. And every other day or any other unit, you just call our environmental services where they come in, they can unclog the toilet. And all of a sudden when it happens in a COVID room where you have, you know, a HEPA filter going in, you have a separate room you gown down in just to go in, you have people watching you to make help you put on everything. It becomes an issue of, you know, can they go in? Are we supposed to go in and they tell us what to do while we're doing it? If it, obviously it's not as simple as just putting a plunger in the toilet. It was like a pipe was actually busted down there. So it was like a lot of different situations arrive, and then you're contacting, you know, usually you would just put in the request of like, oh, we have a situation in the bathroom, they come up and fix it. But all of a sudden it's like, we don't know if we can come up because we don't know, we don't have clearance to go in those kind of, so it's a lot of different. Well, obviously a hospital works by all these departments working together, and all of a sudden you take away these departments' access and all questions arise of, is it safe to go in? Or, you know, environmental services are like, you know, we don't necessarily want to go in, things like that, which I can't blame them for. So a lot of questions arise, and every time these questions arrive, I think it just adds a little anxiety to it. So that's, I've definitely seen a shift like that. However, now that we're in at the end of May now, so we've been a COVID unit for 2 months, I think a lot of kinks are worked out and it's pretty well flowing in terms of that. But definitely for the last 2 months, it has been a lot of questions arising and then kind of putting out fires as they go.
So, I mean, besides that adding, I mean, I'd imagine that's making your job even more exhausting, having to navigate these kind of different kind of situations. And then what would you say, like, the morale of the unit or the hospital has, how has that changed throughout this whole experience too?
I have to say it's been pretty good, actually. It's been impressive. We have a lot of support from the community, like a lot. You know, we get, people have been delivering flowers to the units. They've been buying people lunches. Like, we've had local businesses catering, which has been awesome to see. I know our hospital does do a good job with sending out daily emails of like, you know, this is how many patients we currently have, and this is what we have in the county, and this is what we have, and this is how we're kind of looking for like PPE wise. So I think they're trying a lot to be very open with the staff. They made a, like a meditation style room from what I've heard. So, you know, staff members can go in and it's supposed to be more relaxed and calming. They had, I know another challenge has been a lot of my coworkers have families and they have kids who are in school and all the schools are now online. So all of a sudden, if, you know, you're a single mom or dad who's has two kids or, you know, and you can't stay at home with them if you have to come to work. So there's been, I think there's been a few community or places opening up for free childcare. Our work has a phone number you can call that, so you can say, you know, like, oh, I need childcare, and they will work with you to find childcare, things like that. So in terms of being, having like resources open, I feel very much that our hospital hasn't, you know, abandoned us in any kind of term. They've stepped up and tried to help kind of navigate the situation. So I feel like that's been good. And of course we're getting a lot of, from what I can tell, we're getting a lot of love from the community in terms of thank yous and everything like that, which is always nice to hear. So I want to say that it's been a positive response from both
kind of our hospital management side of letting them know they're not just abandoning us or anything like that, but them stepping up to help out, as well as the community letting us know that they're thankful for everything. So
for sure, for sure. Yeah, I'm really curious too what you brought up about people that don't have COVID related symptoms or illnesses that are waiting to go to a hospital. And I think this is an issue with what's going on that we probably won't be talked about, I think, until this has been over for a while, mm-hmm. until we can really see what happened. And it's, you know, I feel like the script has been flipped, because a lot of the times it used to be people going to the hospital for a reason they didn't need to be there for. And now it's the opposite. And I'm curious, you know, what your take on, you know, lasting damage with that, or how that can be mitigated. I mean,
right. So definitely, obviously, the idea of the hospital is to be that like center of attention, to where if you don't feel good, you go to. And the idea, especially with public health, the whole idea was to teach people to listen to their bodies. And if you feel off or anything like that, don't ignore it and let it get worse. Always, you know, call your doctor, get it checked out, you know, take preventive medication steps. It's all about prevention. And obviously our hospital is more for the reactive side, where you're already sick and you come to us, and we try to, you know, go there. So I definitely think that with this whole COVID thing happening, it has been difficult to maintain that kind of relationship with the communities, to say, come to us when you're not feeling good. Because one, it's kind of scary that I know our ER, we have like tents outside, and that's to separate, you know, we have nurses outside that will meet you before you walk into the ER, and you'll say, this is why I'm coming. And if you, you know, say, oh, I have a fever, or I have a cough or anything, you'll be sent to the tents outside where you're isolated. And then we have rapid testing that they can do, things like that now. And of course, if you're having complete opposite symptoms, you can go in the ER, but even that is kind of intimidating. So I can see why somebody wouldn't, especially because we have a lot of security guards in those areas for, you know, other potential problems for other people's safety. So it is intimidating. So I can see why someone, you know, driving by would say, oh, I'm not sick enough to go there, or something like that. Hopefully once this, it's going to be hard, because you can't say once this ends, because obviously you can't just get rid of a disease. So I think the goal would be, once we get to back to what we call, you know, a semi-normal way of society again, and where everything's open, we will be able to kind of reestablish as a place to go to if you're feeling sick or not. But in the meantime, I think it's important to have people, or more, I guess, public awareness, to continue to go to the hospital if you aren't. You know, we're not, I know every hospital is not just mixing you in with, you know, COVID patients. They're doing their best to separate the two, so you are going in and you're not exposing yourself potentially to COVID, and we're being as safe as possible to keep you with your kind of situation. But it's definitely hard, because again, every time you, I feel like, kind of turn on the news or anything like that, it's constant news about how bad the COVID is, which reinforces the idea of you don't want it, which of course makes sense, which then makes you think, well, I don't want to go to a hospital where all these people are working to get it if you don't think you necessarily need to go. I hope though that, you know, people realize that it is a lot safer to go to the hospital if you're not feeling good than to, you know, risk it on your own and just hope your problem goes away. So I hope that in the coming months, that as we continue to get a better hold on the disease, and if, you know, if a vaccine is ever created for the disease, things like that, we will be able to have people feel safe again, come for any problem they want, because, you know, we'd rather be overloaded with patients and have to deal with that problem than be underloaded with patients because they're afraid to come, and then have to deal with extremely sick patients that would have been a much more treatable problem if they had just come originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. I'm sure that's changed, you know, outlooks on, especially for ERs, when you're getting certain calls coming in with you know, vague chief complaint like shortness of breath or like that, where you're like, oh, whatever. Yeah, and then it's way worse than you think it is. More often than not, would be definitely change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And also too, it's, you know, there's a lot of politicization around medicine and.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, being a nurse and being involved in it, and how, you know, have you navigated that? I mean, do you feel like an added focus on your profession, or you being a source of information for people?
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting, you know, getting calls from family members and everything like that, asking about, you know, oh, how's it going, or even like suggestions of what to do. It's weird for me personally to feel as a body of knowledge, just because when I'm still relatively a new nurse, you know, it's only been about a year. So I still have trouble grasping with the idea that I actually know what I'm doing. So, it's weird for me to have all of a sudden a more kind of influx of calls to see of, you know, people asking questions, but I know also, not necessarily at our hospital, but it seems to be kind of in the community of healthcare, that I've been seeing as our government is really kind of putting the idea that, oh, healthcare workers are the heroes of the situation, things like that. I've seen a lot of articles about kind of the idea of saying that, oh, they're calling healthcare workers heroes, meaning that's okay for them to work in maybe unsafe working conditions. For example, this has been mainly around New York and things like that, where you're hearing stories of people reusing N95s for 2 weeks. They're having, you know, brown paper bags that they're sticking masks in, things like that, where normally that wouldn't be an acceptable situation. However, all of a sudden, because of this mask shortage, people are bending the rules because, you know, they don't, it's either, you know, they can't just create more PPE out of nowhere. They have to, you know, adjust as they see accordingly, but at the same time, reusing things that weren't necessarily made to be reused more than once is putting a lot of people at risk. And while I personally don't feel that at our hospital, I have heard complaints about that, and how the word, you know, oh, healthcare heroes and things like that is trying to make it more generally acceptable that, oh, they're heroes. They're okay to, you know, kind of sacrifice their well-being to help others because they're heroes. And a lot of people aren't liking that kind of comparison, because obviously, you know, everyone in the healthcare profession, as far as I know, gets in because they want to help people. But they also want to help people while they're working under safe, you know, working conditions. And, you know, so it's been interesting hearing that. And I think our hospital has heard that as well. That's why they're being very good about telling us with their daily emails of like, oh, we have enough PPE, so we don't have to do what's going on in these other places. But that's definitely been something interesting I've seen about the kind of current outbreak that we're having. But yeah, other than that, it's been nice to get a whole bunch of free food. That's for sure.
You know, I was going to kind of ask about that too, in that, I mean, it's hard to describe that. There's like Nurses Week.
Right.
Well, Nurses Week, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, so, cause I'm thinking back to like EMS week and stuff. When, you know, you're getting special attention in a positive way. And when that eventually goes back to normal levels,
mm-hmm.
you think it will, that will kind of change the relationship between the public and healthcare professionals? Does this seem like a temporary kind of like, hey, we're just being nice kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people are, or a lot of people in the healthcare profession are afraid that once it goes back, that everyone will just kind of not learn from the situation and will go back into being kind of in a reactive state of we'll just wait for the next, you know, outbreak to happen or anything like that. And we'll just kind of do this all over again where we just kind of stumble our way through the beginning and hopefully everything works out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the biggest fear is that we don't take any, or we don't learn anything from this and take any more proactive steps in terms of, you know, having more guidelines in place for what to do for, you know, when outbreaks occur. Obviously, it's hard to make general guidelines for specific diseases, but I don't think there will be any problem in terms of nurses at least feeling that they're not getting special attention anymore. So I think people are more than happy for it to go back to the way it was, you know, last year than the way it currently is. But yeah, I really hope that we do kind of learn from the way that what position we were in terms of a healthcare point, that we don't, you know, just go back to the way it was, but that we put more emphasis on let's keep healthcare workers safe by making sure we have extra, you know, supplies and guidelines, things like that. So I hope if we learn anything from the situation, it'll be to be more prepared and to put more funding into healthcare. But
do you think too that having some background in public health, having some background as a CNA, I think everyone that mm-hmm. wants to work in medicine should be a CNA for
like, right, yeah.
Just to get out of the way. I mean, exactly. Do you think that's kind of helped, you know, put things in perspective a little bit more for you? And
yeah, I definitely think, well, I mean, obviously I will be always of the aspect that more education is better and more experiences too will always kind of, you know, open your eyes to different ways that things are done, things like that. So I feel like that has helped me. I feel that in nursing school, there wasn't a lot of emphasis on kind of being proactive in terms of getting information out there. I think that has changed a lot in the recent years. And I know now, like at my current job, we do have a lot of education in it. So when we get a lot of preventable diseases, or not preventable, but manageable diseases like diabetes type 2 or, you know, hypertension, CHF, things like that, we have books that we can sit down with our patients, we go over them, we have entire diet plans that we can give to them. So we do a lot of education so they don't have to come back, you know. But that wasn't, I feel like, as touched on when in nursing school. That was more of a public health degree that I learned that through, and that I see that, you know, theoretically it'd be awesome if we didn't need any kind of healthcare facilities like that because everyone would be healthy on their own. And that was kind of the more idea behind public health from what I saw. So I feel like that kind of preventative stance have carried with me personally into the hospital of always trying to look at. Also, I feel like public health has taught me to look at other factors besides just medical. So, you know, social economic standing, where they're living at the time, are they with family, are they alone, depression, things like that. It takes a more kind of broader view than just focusing on the medical aspects. And while I think the hospital is currently catching up to that, public health was where I learned a lot of that. And I know there is a saying, I don't actually remember the exact saying, but something like, you know, education where they will figure out kind of the correct way to do things 10 years before it's actually implemented in the hospitals because there's so much kind of bureaucracy to go through to get that changes in. So, you know, there's a lot of things we know now that we are teaching also in schools that like, oh, this is the correct way to do things that aren't yet implemented just because there's such kind of a big time gap between
what we know in schools and what are being implemented. So that's, it's interesting to see that, at least, that you're learning one thing in school and you go to the, you know, hospital, or you go out and wherever you're going to work, and you don't see that being implemented just because there's not that kind of information that side of the world yet, for the healthcare world at least.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as you said, I think everyone should be a CNA, because that, you know, you kind of get to do everything as a CNA, and then as you kind of move up the ladder in terms of the healthcare profession wise, that you get to always remember kind of where that patient care at least always starts with actually caring for the patient, and not just looking at documents or medical records and things like that, labs.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. For sure. Yeah. I'm sure the CNAs of your hospital appreciate that, you know what their world's like.
Yeah, I definitely think too, it's been a nice eye opener, because for our COVID unit, they only allow nurses and the single doctor taking care of all the COVID patients right now. So we have sent away, you know, all of the CNAs, things like that. So we're doing total care on our patients. So it's been a cool one. It's been kind of cool because we are limited with the amount of patients that we're allowed to get. Right now we're taking 2 patients per nurse, that it does allow us to take that time to get to know the patient better. And there's just things you learn about someone, you know, when you're giving them, you know, when you're cleaning them or giving them a bath or something like that, that you just wouldn't learn otherwise. So it has been kind of a nice, you know, reminder of, you know, the importance of everything.
Sure. Has it been difficult managing, I assume you're like the point of contact between patient, family and patient.
Yeah, so that's definitely been, you know, an interesting part, is we don't allow any visitors anymore in the hospital at all. So it doesn't matter what unit you're on. The only time we're going to allow visitors, I think, is if your family member is actively dying or if you are giving birth. Those are the 2 exceptions. Other than that, we aren't allowing. So it has been difficult because, one, once, you know, someone finds out that their loved one's on a COVID floor, they want to know everything going on. And, of course, many people have many loved ones, so you're getting calls all the time from, you know, multiple people. A lot of it's repeating the same information. So I know that we've been having to try to, you know, designate one family member to be the point of contact between the nurse and the doctor and their family. We are just implementing a, like, FaceTime service now, which is, we have like iPad set up so, you know, loved ones can see their patient, things like that, or see their family member. So that has been good, but it's definitely been a little bit hectic between everything going on with, you know, dealing with the patient and the medical side, as well as continuously fielding calls from, you know, loved ones trying to make sure. And of course you understand their situation. It'd be hard to hear, you know, someone has COVID and then you can't go see them. So it's definitely been hard, and it's definitely, I think the person who gets it the hardest is the patient themselves, because they're in total isolation. You know, and the only time they get to see us is when we are completely head to toe, gown down. And that is hard. Luckily, we're in a situation where we have, like glass walls in the very front, so they can see us at all times, but they don't get to get up and they don't get to walk around the unit, or, you know, if they have to do anything, they call us so we can go in and help them, because if they were to get up and trip, then, you know, we have to gown down and go in there. So it's always better to be in there beforehand. All of their, you know, food is brought into them on, you know, disposable plates, things like that, because we can't keep anything. So I think it takes a very heavy mental toll just to see that, you know, they're completely isolated. We do have a social service clinical manager that goes in, and they're able to provide, you know, more emotional support to them, which has been really great. But it's hard because we had a patient who, you know, forgot his iPhone charger, and his iPhone was dead. And usually we have individual cables that we give out,
But because at the time this was the first time it happened, they weren't willing to give out, you know, the iPhone cable to him to charge the iPhone. So it was like this whole thing where all of a sudden now his only point of contact with the outside world is cut off, and like, how do we deal with that? So, you know, obviously we're lucky to figure out the situation quickly, but it was that kind of all of a sudden his one point of contact is kind of cut off, and he really is kind of in that social isolation of he can't really see anyone. And, you know, we do our best. We always have phones at bedside, and we let him know that for, you know, whatever reason, if they just want to talk and hang out, to call us, and we'll, you know, talk to him. But I think as much as it's been dealing with the physical symptoms of COVID, it's also been dealing with the mental symptoms of, you know, social isolation and being in total isolation in there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. So this is something that I always ask at the end of an interview. Yeah. Is there anything that you feel like that I should have asked you?
No, I think you're doing a pretty, you seem to ask all the right questions. I also have never conducted an interview before, so I don't actually know what to ask, so.
No, that's fine. That's fine. You're natural. Yeah, great. Well, I appreciate it, and I'll stop the recording.
I hope I was able to give you something.
You were.